Hi everyone, I'm Ian Wright. Make sure you check out my podcast, Wrighty's House, every Wednesday on Ringer FC. Each week, I'm joined by a rotating panel of guests to talk about football, life, films, everything. Search for Ringer FC on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Take it easy.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. Put up a new episode of the Prestige TV podcast yesterday. Me and Chris Ryan and Big Waz covered the last couple episodes of Winning Time on HBO, a show that has really found its stride. We explained why. We tried to make predictions for the last four. If you're checking that show out, you should go check out that episode because I thought we covered everything. The Prestige TV pod in general, covering Atlanta every week. Better Call Saul. We're starting deep dives next week. We're going to do Winning Time the rest of the way. We have Barry coming with a very special guest on that one. We have the We Crash season finale. We have We Own This City coming up end of April, which is basically the spiritual successor to The Wire, and then The Offer, which I'm really excited about. I've seen the pilot of. It is about the making of The Godfather. So all of that is coming. It is going to be a loaded feed the rest of the way. So please check it out, because if you like the rewatchables and you like some of our pop culture stuff, I would recommend the Prestige TV podcast. Coming up on this podcast, old friend Kevin Wildes. We're going to talk all kinds of NBA stuff, and he's going to do some half-baked ideas. I am going to give my playoff picks. And last but not least, the great Eddie Johnson, longtime NBA player. You can hear him with Justin Termini on Sirius NBA show, a show that I really like. And he's going to tell us about the Suns, Devin Booker, talk about life in the 80s, whole bunch of stuff. I really had fun with that one. This is a good podcast. It's all next. First, Pearl Jam. All right, my old friend Kevin Wildes is here. We used to work together a million years ago. He is on First Things First on FS1. He is the master of the half-baked ideas. He is somebody who is on my side as we predicted Tom Brady would not go away, that he was immortal. Do you think he could play till he's 50? What's your final age? What's the over-under age for Tom Brady's actual retirement? If I gave you like 48 and a half, would you go over?
Yes.
You'd go
I
over?
I wouldn't bet. Yeah, I wouldn't bet it. If it was at 52, I wouldn't bet it. I'd be like, I'm going to leave that one alone. But he said 50 or 55 before.
Yeah.
55 seems strange until you like look up and like, oh, Brad Pitt is, you know, 89. Like, wow, he looks good for 89.
Right. So that's like Mark Jones on ESPN. He's like 61.
Like, it just, I don't know, aging doesn't really matter anymore.
So, I think Greg Gumbel is like 123. I read that. I don't know if that's true.
Looks great.
It's never looked better. Yeah, the Brady thing. I wonder what's going to happen here with Brady and LeBron from an age standpoint. I think they're going to be really fascinating because of the technology and all the ways you can keep your body way fresher than any other era we've had. Their competitiveness, their goals to break records, to, you know, set some sort of bar. And also, the fact that they love the limelight. I think Brady, we'll talk about the conspiracy stuff with Dolphins in a second, but if Brady's still good, why wouldn't he play? You and I would both keep playing until we weren't good at playing anymore.
Well, I feel like something that has been consistently just overlooked is 44 is still young to retire. Like, none of Brady's peers are retiring. I mean, his NFL peers are retiring, but none of the guys he went to high school with or college are talking about golfing 8 hours a day for the next 40 years of their life. So yeah. It's not that strange. And I know the broadcast acts like he's 70 years old because he is old in comparison to every other quarterback, but in real life, he's not old. So of course he's not going to retire. Be like, oh, Bill, you should retire. You should just be done and just golf. They're like, no. First of all, I like what I'm doing. I don't want to retire.
Wait, talk to me more about me retiring, because I feel like you could talk me into it in about a minute and a half.
About why? No.
It sounds great.
I try to get you the other way. I'm going to mail you a typewriter like I'm Tom Hanks. Like, hey, why don't you bang out a column? Just give it a shot. Just start fresh.
Maybe someday. Yeah, I think Brady, I think the lesson we have, no matter what the eras are, is people usually play until it really starts to decline and they become a little bit embarrassed. Or like in Peyton Manning's case, nobody wants to hire them anymore. You know, so but they'll stick around for as long as they can. Very rarely do people go, I'm good. And they do the blackjack, wiping the hands and put their hands up. They're gone.
So do you think Brady would be satisfied with a 9-8 season? A 9-8 season where he's just, would he be satisfied with a Jimmy G type season where the team wins, but he doesn't, you know, it's a lot of running attack and defense.
I think he set every single individual record you could probably set. And those things are probably so far away. He doesn't have to worry about that anymore. I think he's looking at it solely with the Super Bowls. LeBron has the two things concurrently, right? He wants more rings. He's four, which is a good number, but it's still one less than Kobe, two less than Jordan. Mm-hmm. He knows he has to at least keep going to try to pass Kareem. He knows he has a chance to do 40,000 points. I don't believe the stuff about playing with the son as a big motivator because we have no idea if his son's an NBA player or not. Like that still has to play out. But the 40,000 points and more rings. So like we were texting about, let's say they can't figure out the Westbrook thing. You know, I talked about that on my Tuesday podcast with KOC. What if they can't figure it out? What if nobody wants Westbrook? What if it's just totally a sunk cost and you have to bring him into the season and just hope like he's an expiring contract in February? You just have to look at it like, we can't get anything for this guy. So either we bury him, we push him to the side, or we hope we could trade him. If he's looking at that, would LeBron now look at that situation and go, this is now not my best chance to win another ring? Do I shove myself somewhere else? Where would that place be, Kevin Wells?
So I think that him bouncing around, going back to Cleveland doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Him looking, it's like, oh, I want to go to New York. I don't think any of that makes any sense because he does have an empire in LA and his family in LA, and Bronny has another year of school. So it's like, oh, he'll never leave the Lakers. And I feel like the only one in the class raising my hand, like, there is another team in Los Angeles that literally plays in the same building. Like he might be able to even like just move, pick up his stuff and move it a few yards to the other locker room. Like, I feel like a Paul George to play with Westbrook, by the way, that's the bonus take of it. A Paul George for LeBron move that LeBron would have to initiate. It's not like Rob Pelinka would do this, but LeBron say, you know what? Maybe me and Kawhi, maybe that's the move. I think that'd be fascinating. I don't think anyone's giving it any real, I don't know, credence, but I've yet to figure out why it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because you could say, the Clippers, they have that stink on them. Donald Sterling's the owner, but he's not the owner anymore. Steve Ballmer's the owner. You could say they're the second class team in LA, but if LeBron is on the team, that shifts a little bit in a way that Kawhi and Paul George being on a team in LA that also has LeBron and Davis, like it just would swing the importance of those two teams against each other. I think it's interesting. You thought it would be a Paul George trade. Because I think you could talk me into like either guy. Because for Kawhi, and we'll go into some of the Clipper stuff in a second, I actually think Paul George, I don't know if I'm the Clippers, I wouldn't trade Paul George for LeBron, as crazy as that sounds. LeBron's going to be in his 20th year next year. He's on the last year of his deal. I have no idea if he's going to stay. Versus Paul George, I have under contract, and he's really good. And then you have Kawhi, who has just missed a ton of games. And, you know, I think if you're them, maybe that's a chance to reduce the risk of the Kawhi contract and roll the dice with LeBron, right?
But I mean, maybe. I just like the Paul George Westbrook pairing. I'm always trying to reunite people. I just always am trying to reunite everybody. It's just like the Gronk Brady thing. I'm just always trying to get, you know, old teammates back together.
Well, like us, we're back together.
Exactly.
And people said it could never happen.
You know, no one said that. But for the right, one other thing that I wanted to run by you.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis's exit interview.
Oh, yeah.
He blamed a lot of it on injury. And there's been a common narrative of, you know, get his body right, hang out with LeBron, sleep in a hyperbaric chamber, you know, eat better, use the Calm app the whole night. And Anthony Davis, like, my training was great. Like, I stepped on Rudy Gobert's foot and someone rolled into me. And I went back and watched the injuries. And like, yeah, Anthony Davis is right. This was not a training, a lack of training or a lack of endurance that got him injured. It was just two freak accidents. So after that exit interview that I feel like he got kind of ripped for a little bit.
Yeah.
But he was right. And I feel like no one's taking his side on it. So basically, do you think that Anthony Davis could come back and play 82 games and the playoffs, since the two injuries he had this year were freak accidents?
Well, freak accidents in one sense, but in the other sense, I thought he was carrying too much weight. And maybe if he's carrying less weight and he's a little more limber, he might avoid it. I'm taking what Anthony Davis said and I'm veering in a sideways direction with it. I wonder, like, you think of all these tall guys, the 6'11" and up guys, the rim runners, the guys who have their hands up, the guys that are always like jumping up and down where there's a lot of legs and feet. I wonder if those are the dangerous people, most dangerous people to pay. Like, you even saw it with the Celtics with Robert Williams, right? He's had a ton of injuries. Embiid, he's been out a bunch. And I was thinking, like, this is all swinging Jokic's way because he can't jump. He's never in a situation where he lands on anyone's feet. Jokic is the safest bet of any center because he has a 6-inch vertical leap.
Oh, goodness.
Whereas all of these other guys who are in the air, no matter who they are, they seem over and over again, like either their bodies break down or like Blake Griffin. How many injuries did Blake Griffin have? He had like eight different injuries.
I don't know. He's stuck on the bench.
Whereas LeBron, I think one of the reasons he's more durable is he would get in the air, especially in the first half of his career, but he became more of like a, I'm just plowing through everybody, kind of like what Anthony Edwards does now, mm-hmm. the young Anthony Edwards. But I wonder, like, I was thinking about Duncan.
The young Anthony,
Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett's another one, 2009. High alley-oop, lands on site, and that's it. His career has totally changed. I don't know. I was just thinking, like, it is weird that there are so many of these injuries with those guys who are around the rim. And should we be more concerned about when you give like somebody like a $220 million deal for a big guy, those guys seem to get hurt more.
That's interesting. I think there was a Reddit post and I talked to somebody about this, and it was on landing mechanics.
Yeah.
And it was for all of the science and analytics, someone just broke down landing mechanics. And I think it was a Derrick Rose post on just how when you're so explosive, you can get up in the air, you just land incorrectly. And that there should be more focus on like, hey, this is how you should land, that no one has ever, studied or explained. It's certainly interesting. But
Ja got hurt this year. Zion, he's been out. I wonder,
the Zion stuff. Have you ever seen better warm-up dunks for a guy who can't get on the court? Like, what dunk are we waiting for Zion to do? He's doing 360 dunks yesterday. He threw one off the backboard between his legs, caught it, and dunked. Like, what exactly do we need him to jump over a Kia for the Pelicans to be like, you know what? I think you're ready. You passed the Kia test. Well, we talked to the doctors. If you can jump over Kia, if you can jump up and blow a candle out from a cupcake that we have on the rim, then we'll be ready to go. You passed. It's ridiculous.
Well, why is he wearing those giant sweatshirts? It almost seems like he's trying to hide something. He's dressing like somebody who came back from spring break and put on weight and is now wearing like baggy clothes. So nobody...
I can't tell.
It's very strange.
You'll look at another picture and he looks super ripped. So I don't know.
Yeah, for some reason he dresses half the time like the brother who failed in a sports movie who's jealous of the hero. And he's like Rod Tidwell's brother and Jerry Maguire. He kind of has that kind of vibe to him. Yeah, I was trying to figure out why big guys, some guys last longer and some guys have more injuries. And admittedly, I haven't done the mega study on it, but Tim Duncan, basically the last 10 years of his career, right? He was on one leg, but maybe that was one of the reasons he was so durable and played so long, because he wasn't like constantly around. Every time I watch basketball, I'm always amazed more guys don't get hurt. When you see these guys flying into a pile of bodies with the feet, the ankle, just everything. Like, I think it's kind of amazing we don't have more injuries.
Did you hear my
like
no
the
diving?
Smart Curry thing? How does that not happen more often? No diving. Let's hear it.
My no diving take is diving should be outlawed in the NBA. You can't die for the ball, period, ever. If you can die for the ball, if it's going out of bounds and you want to keep it in bounds, like the old Dennis Rodman poster, but if there's someone near the ball and the idea that you would die for it, like it's a fumble, would be eliminated from the game. It'd be a flagrant foul. It's just too dangerous of a play where LeBron got hurt doing Steph got hurt. Kyrie almost got hurt. I think that was earlier this year. Kyrie almost got hurt. Like, we're just waiting for someone to get seriously injured with something that's obvious. And there's a certain, you know, nostalgia for it. Like, oh, get on the floor, dive. It makes no sense. And it's a player safety issue. Like, no, you can pick up the ball, but you're not allowed to just dive at the ball head first when there's someone around. And I would treat it like a quarterback roughing the quarterback. Any touch of any molecule is a flagrant foul.
No, interesting.
It sounds crazy, but it makes perfect sense, and it will eventually happen. I'm going to be going in the ground in 50 years and be like, good news, they passed the no diving rule. I was like, yes, I knew it was going to happen. And then I would go, it's going to happen eventually. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was trying to think, if you had told me, what, 15 years ago, that you're not going to be able to hit receivers over the middle anymore and you can't try to sack a quarterback unless it's at their hips.
And guess what?
I would have said, there's no way they're going to do that. That's going to ruin football.
And the game's better. The game's better and faster and safer.
Maybe we do in the regular season, you can't dive.
No, you can't ever. Well, that's actually not bad. That's actually not bad. If you know what? If that's what it needs to get over the finish line, it's like getting a bill through the government. Like, you know what? I'll make that concession.
Well, then what do we do with soccer? The slide tackle is the most dangerous thing in soccer.
There's no slide tackles in youth soccer. No slide tackles. Too dangerous. It's just called a dangerous play because it's too dangerous. Hmm. Slide tackles overall should go.
Let's take a break. I want to talk about the Clippers. Hey, in the NBA playing tournament, there's no sure things except one. If you bet at least $20 in same game parlays on FanDuel Sportsbook, you'll get an instant bonus, win or lose. That's right. Get the NBA's best duking it out on Friday night for the right to advance to the playoffs, and FanDuel giving all customers a bonus for getting in on the action. The more you bet, the bigger the bonus. I would recommend messing around with the New Orleans game. I like New Orleans' chances against the Clippers. You can either do an adjusted line, bring them all the way to like +7.5, or just bet them to win and then throw in the CJ McCollum will score 20 points. Throw in some Herb Jones steals, whatever you want to do. I like McCollum and Herb Jones in that game. But I would recommend that for some sort of same game parlay. FanDuel is an official partner of the NBA. Their app is safe, easy to use. You'll get your winnings fast. If you're new to FanDuel Sportsbook, sign up today with promo code BS to make every moment more. Don't just watch the NBA play-in tournament. Be a part of it. Bet at least $20 in same game parlays. Get an instant bonus, win or lose. Must be 21 plus, present in select states only. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable free bets that expire in 7 days. Max bonus $100. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Connecticut, 888-789-777. In Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER. In Michigan, 800-270-7117. 1-877-770-STOP. In Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Tennessee Redline is 800-889-9789. And in West Virginia, 1800-GAMBLER.net. All right, coming back. So we're taping this. It's Thursday morning. The Clippers play-in game is on Friday night. So if Kawhi miraculously does the Willis Reed for this game, like we didn't know. Sorry we didn't talk about that, but I'm going to guess that's not going to happen. This Clippers thing is pretty crazy. In 2019, they're 48-34. Feel-good team. Lost to Golden State in round one. They had SGA. They had Gallo, Zubats, Pat Beverly, Shamit, Harrell, Lou Williams, ton of picks, cap space. They say, fuck it. They go all in on Kawhi and Paul George. OKC's haul from that trade. They got SGA. They got Gallinari. They got Miami's 2021 first, which turned into Trey Mann. They have the Clippers first this year. Pick swap with the Clippers, 23. Clippers first in 24. Pick swap with the Clippers, 25. Clippers first in 26. Here's what's happened with the Clippers. 49-23 in 2020, lost round two, game seven in the bubble. 2021, 47-25, lost to Phoenix, round three, conference finals, game six. 2022 Clippers, 42-40, playing for their play-in lives against the Pelicans. This could be the end of year three of Kawhi and Paul George. So I guess the question is, was it worth it?
Yeah, well, okay. You just laid out a great argument that it was not worth it. But if suppose they get through the Pelicans and all of a sudden Kawhi is feeling good, would you be shocked if they ended up in the Western Conference Finals? I believe in the Suns with an asterisk, but would you be shocked
what asterisk? What else do they have to do? They could have gotten like 67-15 if they wanted to. What do you mean asterisks? What's missing? Tell me.
I don't know. I believe in the Suns. I said I believe in the Suns.
With an asterisk. You said, what's the asterisk?
With an asterisk. It might be a little bit of franchise.
Oh. They've never gotten over the hump as a franchise.
I believed in the Red Sox. But before, until we won a World Series, then he started to really believe in it. I know that makes no logical sense.
No, it makes sense. It's
that
a Red
Tom
Sox. I get
Chambers'
it.
Failure has nothing to do with Devin Booker. But I'm just going to tell you what's in my heart. I believe in them with an asterisk.
Kawhi and Paul George, they've missed 208 regular season games in three seasons. Kawhi missed the last eight playoff games last year. Probably not in the playoffs this year. They've won three playoff series total. And here's my take.
Okay.
I think you do it again. I would do it again.
That's what I'm saying.
I think
they
had
stars.
I went into this when I was doing my research thinking the day of the go for it trade is over. And then I look back at all the go for it trades, starting with the Celtics and with Kyrie that did not work. Two series wins. He played five playoff games total. The Rockets with CP3 almost worked. Had a great regular season team. Couldn't get over the hump. For what they gave up, maybe. Brooklyn getting KD, like basically using their cap for KD and Kyrie, hasn't worked yet.
Sure.
But 2019 Raptors with the go for a trade with Kawhi. 1 year of Kawhi. They gave up DeMar DeRozan and Pirtle, who's good. It worked. They won the title. 2020 Rockets. They go in for Russ. Did not work. That's like your worst case scenario. Big picks down the road. Trade was a disaster. Harden had to be traded. 2020 Lakers. Gave up more for anybody in the history of the NBA.
Worked.
They won a finals. I think most Lakers fans, I guess, would do that again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Clippers we mentioned. 2021 Bucks. Jrue Holiday. Won the finals. And then the 2022 Sixers. So I just listed nine teams who went for it since 2018. And three of them were three of our four finals champions during that stretch.
Yeah. Well, don't you prefer a team to just say, I feel like we're in the golden age of sports carpe diem. And it's probably LeBron when he was signing all those one-year contracts of like, no planning for the future. I want to win now and bring Kevin Love here. Like, I want to win now. And then I felt like Tom Brady followed LeBron's footsteps.
Yeah.
Belichick was like, we kind of put a championship on the credit card. Now the Bills do. And Tom Brady's like, well, I'm out on this. I'm done with you guys spending money on special teams when I want wide receivers.
Yeah.
And then the Bucks went all in. And then now it felt like Tom Brady had to have a sham retirement to make them go all in again.
So right.
If I'm a franchise, I like a team that's willing to go all in. If I'm in a fan, I like a team that's willing to go all in. And yeah, I would do it again if I was the Clippers. And if I'm Steve Ballmer.
The Rams too. The Rams were another all-in team.
Yeah, I don't understand the Rams salary cap. Explain that one to me. Like they just keep
It's like the Bermuda Triangle when we used to watch Bermuda Triangle shows in the 80s and 90s. I'm like, why is this a bigger deal? Hey, all these planes just disappear there. What's happening?
Like every free agent, like, Gilmore is interested in the Rams. Like, how?
Right.
How? What is going on? Like, well, they're good with the cap.
I follow sports for a living. I got a 690 in math on my SATs. And I feel like I understand everything. And then when it comes to the NFL salary cap, it might as well be in like Greek.
No idea.
Like the Rams are like, oh, the Rams signed this guy. And we're like, the Patriots, they spent like 4 free agents a spring ago. And now they're like completely handicapped this year. They can't get anybody. It's like they're just bargain shopping.
I do understand the Patriots salary cap. The Patriots salary cap is very much like the cash I have in my wallet. Like, oh, I have $20. I bought a coffee. That was $17.
Right. I'm buying a tuna fish sandwich.
And it's like, okay, now I'm down to 8. There is no good news, everybody. We got Tyrann Mathieu and we're paying him $12 million a year. Like, oh, great. It feels very
well, it almost seems like basic. It's like it almost seems like the NFL salary cap is a credit card in college that you can either go nuts with or be responsible with. And it seems like the Patriots are just super responsible. We don't want to do this. It could hurt us down the road. The part I don't get is they have a quarterback on a rookie contract who's picked in the middle of the first round, which is the biggest asset you have. You have everybody else's, like Derek Carr. He's, I don't know, $40 million a year extension, right? Every good team that they're competing against is paying somewhere between like 20 and 50 million for their quarterback. And the Pats have a quarterback probably making like 3 or 4. And they're like, JC Jackson, too rich for our blood. It's like, is it?
I think we're, I follow the salary cap guy on Patriot salary cap on Twitter. And
I like that
excellent.
Guy.
And excellent. I think we're going to have a ton of money next year.
All right,
but I also
great.
Don't
so
like to be
it
in
over.
The preseason. I don't like to be in the preseason talking about next year already.
Yeah,
the
I
draft talking about next,
anyway,
2 years from now. Sorry.
Back to the Clippers. They didn't really, from a salary standpoint, get crushed the first 2 years. But this year's team, which went 42-40, Paul George played 31 games, Kawhi played 0 games.
Made the playoffs.
$166 million payroll. $83 million luxury tax bill. The team cost $249 million. I guess the bigger picture thing for the Clippers, it wasn't just a gamble on winning the title. It was a gamble on trying to own basketball in LA. It was Ballmer's belief that he could build an LA basketball team that could either rival or surpass the Lakers, right down to the fact he's building this multi-billion dollar basketball arena, you know, in Inglewood, because he doesn't want to be tied to the Lakers. And anyway, we're going to beat these guys. And they get Kawhi and they get Paul George. Kawhi made first team All-NBA last year. Paul George made third team. So two of the best 15 guys in the league. So I still think it's defensible. It's just kind of amazing how bad the luck was with the Kawhi injury when it happened. To have somebody hurt his ACL in round 2 of a playoff series that they're probably about to win. But then it's a 12-month injury and it brings it to the next. So it's almost like you somehow lose 2 playoffs with the same injury, which is almost, and Denver, I guess, has a little bit of this with Jamal Murray, but that, to me, that gets into some weird Clippers curse shit, which I was writing about in 2009, about pulling the team away from Buffalo and all the weird shit that happened. This is among the weirdest thing that's happened to them.
I love that you are a wonderful mix of like in-depth analysis and then just talking about curses.
Crazy
team,
shit, yeah.
It's this wonderful mix.
Prove me wrong. What other team would that happen to? This is a 45-year run for them of just pick the worst thing that could happen to a team. Blake Griffin had 8 surgeries. This was their guy. He was out for the year as a rookie.
Well, yeah, he came out of college. What, he got hurt? He got hurt in summer league, right?
He got hurt in preseason. Though. Yeah.
Okay, question for you. When you talked about Ballmer wanting to own LA basketball.
Yeah.
Do you think that is remotely on the board? Because we're going through it here with the Knicks and the Nets. The Nets are in the playoffs. They have maybe, you know, a definite top 15 player of all time.
Yeah.
Kyrie, one of the most dynamic players of all time. And at one point, James, an MVP in James Harden. And it was still like, oh, you know, the Knicks won 2 in a row. Like, yeah, big celebration. And the Nets will never have it. It's just, it's like Yankees Mets a little bit.
I wonder if the players feel that or do they even care? Like, I don't think Durant cares about, I just think he wants to play basketball. I don't think he cares about his situation anyway.
He mentioned it the other day when they won. When they won at the Garden, there was a little bit of cheering. He's like, "Oh, we're getting there." I think Kyrie cares a little bit, just because he grew up in New Jersey and he really, he's talked openly about like how much he loved the Nets growing up. But I wonder if Ballmer is sort of chasing this goal that he can never catch of like the hearts and minds of the LA sports fan. Even when he gets a championship, he's still going to be like, turns out it's still a Lakers town.
I have a good analogy for you.
Okay.
It's a little like Zuckerberg with the metaverse.
Don't get me started on metaverse, dude.
He's like, I see the future and I'm going to be at the forefront of it. It's the metaverse. Ballmer's like, I see the future. It's LA basketball, only instead of the Lakers, it's the Clippers. And just goes all in. And it's like, Steve, stop spending money. No, I can't stop. I'm going to make this happen. And that's kind of like Zuckerberg. I really like Ballmer. I think if you have Ballmer as an owner, you're in great shape. He's all you want from an owner is be supportive, do whatever it takes to win, spend money, be a good guy. He seems to check all those boxes. But I think he's sorely, sorely, sorely underestimated the Laker DNA in LA. And to the point where like Kawhi and George go to Dodgers games and they show them on the Jumbotron and they get booed.
I didn't know. Really?
Oh, yeah. It's that Lakers Dodgers. Because Lakers fans and Dodger fans, that's it. That's 97% of LA. And they don't like the Clippers. So if Laker fans aren't like, well, if we don't win, at least the Clippers are still in it. They don't think that way. It's just like the Knicks fans could care less about Brooklyn. So I don't know how you defeat that. You try to get kids, you have cooler uniforms, you basically try to raise young pup Nets and Clipper fans, I think is the move, and grab people in their 20s who just root for players instead of teams. That's where our kids are going to root for players, not teams. That's where this is really heading.
Oh yeah. My kids love the Bucks and the Chiefs. They don't
Which makes no sense. You live in New York.
I know, but like, so I like the Patriots, but they don't live in New England, so they don't have an affinity for the Patriots. Although I'm trying to indoctrinate them with, Mac Jones. But Billy likes the Bucks because he dressed up as a pirate and he saw the Bucks have, a cannon. That's great. And Russie likes Mahomes. Everybody loves Mahomes. So,
we're going back to where we were in the mid 70s where most of the kids in class would either go for the local team or just who was good the moment they started liking sports.
That's right.
Which is why a lot of the people my age are like big Steeler fans, big Cowboy fans, big Yankee fans, you know, and I guess in Boston, there weren't a lot of Yankee fans, but there were like, because the Patriots weren't very good, there were Steelers and Cowboys fans, which I always thought was weird. It's like, why don't you root for the Patriots? They're right here. It's like, well, they went 3-11 last year. but the Clippers, it's a missed opportunity, but I don't begrudge them for going for it. I will say we could look back at this historically with all of the picks they're going to give up if Kawhi cannot stay on the court. And Paul George, who's now, he's had a whole bunch of different physical issues too. Those guys are now in their 30s. And I just wonder how that works out for them.
Do you want to still talk? Can I throw one more take in on the Clippers? And this was something this is something Nick said on the show today. Said
Nick Wright, Kevin Durant's arch rival, Nick Wright.
Look, hey, good, any news is good news. You should have him on the pod, by the way. This is my public. Oh, you would love it. You guys would be great. He's more analytical, less like curses, but you guys could get into it.
Yeah.
He said something interesting. He said the last person that led the Lakers that the Lakers drafted was Kobe. Oh, it was a trade. And then James Worthy, like every Lakers star was, came to LA for the Lakers. It wasn't a build through the draft scenario. So do you think that, because it's a lot of the, ancillary
technically they drafted stuff. Kobe, they technically drafted, but they traded for the pick to get him.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, I'll count Kobe and James, but then it's James Worthy.
Yeah.
And the idea that LA, just like the Rams, all whether it's business and the weather and whatever. Don't you think that the Clippers can draft off that a little bit? Like, and just you know, sell LA as part of the benefit of playing for Steve Ballmer and Steve Ballmer's team?
I mean, their best hope is that the Lakers continue to be such a dumpster fire behind the scenes that the Clippers just look like the more competent organization. You know, because you think like the Lakers were a complete dumpster fire for the entire 2010s. They got LeBron because he wanted to live in LA and they had cap space. They got Davis because they had been in the top seven of the lottery so many times and they had LeBron. They were able to will Davis to come over thanks to Clutch. But other than that, now they're in the same situation again with the same two guys and really no help at all. And you could argue they have one of the worst organizational situations in the entire league. Whereas the Clippers have been pretty competent. They have a really good coach. And, you know, I think there's a professionalism to them on the court behind the scenes that I just don't know if the Lakers have. I think that
maybe it's the new arena.
Well, the new arena will be, you know, that could push over the top too. Who knows? All right, we're going to take one more break. All right, I did a Wilds-like Instagram post. I wrote out what I thought was going to happen in the playoffs. Now, I actually didn't do this for Instagram, but then when I wrote it out, I was like, oh, that looks cool, and I just posted it. I posted my picks, which my picks were basically Miami over Atlanta, Toronto over Philly.
Ooh.
Phoenix over New Orleans, Dallas over Utah, Boston over Brooklyn, Milwaukee over Chicago, Memphis over Minnesota, Golden State over Denver. Then next round, Miami over Toronto, Boston over Milwaukee, Phoenix over Dallas, Memphis over Golden State. I'm sorry, Golden State over Memphis. And then last but not least, Boston over Miami, Phoenix over Golden State, and then the finals, Phoenix over Boston, the 1976 finals rematch. So those are my picks. I nailed all four play-in games so far. Out of the ones, my favorite for round one, I like Golden State the most. I picked them in the Instagram post, Golden State in seven. The more I look at it, I think Denver might be the worst team in the West that made the playoffs. Even if you gave me New Orleans or the Clippers coming in there, it's Jokic, who I voted for MVP. And then it's just like, I don't trust anyone else in that team. And I guess the question is, like, if you're Phoenix and you have the first pick, you could pick any other playoff team in the West to play for. And let's say we'll include New Orleans and the Clippers. All right, let's say the Clippers beat New Orleans. We'll take New Orleans out. Would you rather play the Clippers, Minnesota, or Denver? If you're Phoenix. I would rather play Denver.
Yeah, I'm not playing Ty Lue. After Ty Lue...
The Bill Belichick of basketball?
Yeah. You know what? I like that.
Can he win more than one title?
I think it'd be great.
Can he win a play-in game against Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell before we compare him to Bill Belichick? Cool.
He will. Did you compare him to... Was that a sarcastic take or no? A real take? The Bill Belichick
basketball. They said that on the telecast. Kevin Harlan and other guy. They were like, some people in basketball, they feel like he's the Bill Belichick of basketball.
Oh, and I thought that was a Bill
Me and many
Simmons
other people
exclusive.
Like, wait, what? No.
Oh, no. I thought that was a Bill Simmons exclusive.
No. Bill Belichick of basketball is iconic. But anyway, my point is, I think Denver is probably the team you'd want to play in the West because of the supporting casting, because they're not going to have Murray back, it doesn't seem like. So if they don't have Murray back, I'd rather play them and just give Jokic, give him his 32, 17, and 10 every game, and I still think I can beat them.
I agree with you. Are you worried about Luka's cast? Where's your worry meter on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm worried, but I just feel like he's like us. Luka's our avatar for what it would like to be the NBA. He shows up overweight. He likes to play at his own pace. No, I'm just saying in general, he's the most identifiable player in the league. It's like, Luka, why'd you show up 50 pounds overweight? I love sweet tea. I'm sorry. It's my weakness. It's like, Luka went on vacation. Oh no, he came back. He gained 7 pounds. Oh, Luka strained his calf.
I am rooting for Luka to come back.
Me too.
Because I adhere to the to the Donovan wants out of Utah conspiracy theory.
I mean, that's great for your show that you get 2 months out of that.
But if the Jazz win, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, and Donovan and Rudy start playing well, I'm like, oh, Donovan, you're not going to ask out. But the Donovan to New York thing, I'm just obsessed with. I just love the idea of Donovan New York, him leaving Utah. Quinn Snyder's going to leave. Him and Rudy don't seem to be perfectly gelling, let's say. But man, if they beat Luka, I'm like, gosh darn it. So all Knicks fans need to go, and we're going to fly down to Dallas for game one.
Why not? Support the franchise.
Support Luka.
I have Dallas in 7 in that series. I'm tired of watching this incarnation of Utah. I think they're probably my least fun team to watch out of all the teams. I think Dallas and Utah is actually, I would stay away from that from a gambling standpoint. My favorite ones, I have these on FanDuel. I like that there's a parlay you can do with the Golden State money line and the Bucks to either win in 4 or 5.
They're not going to win in 4.
And that's plus 117. No, it's just Bucks to win 4 or 5.
Oh, 4 or 5. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just that series does not go to game 6. You can bet on that. It's minus like 190. I like that. I like the Toronto money line. I think that Thybul thing's a disaster for them. That's their only defender. He's not going to play in 3 Toronto games. That's brutal.
Well, you have to make sure you don't get to 3 Toronto games, right?
Yeah, I think that's a bad matchup for Philly. I also like the Raps in 6. That's plus 490. I like the Celts in 6, plus 550. I don't know if Brooklyn has the same kind of... Boston was one of the best road teams of the last 20 years. And I'm not sure Brooklyn has the kind of home court advantage, like if they were going to Milwaukee or a place like that. I think a Brooklyn game would have a lot of Boston fans at it.
Brooklyn has no home court advantage. Can I give you my best Celtics stat, courtesy of my researcher, Dusty?
Yeah.
Do you know the largest point differential since the merger? 95-96 Bulls, 12.2, won the title, obviously. 2022 Celtics. Now, this is the caveat I made with Dusty.
Yeah.
Not looking at the full season. I'm breaking the Celtics season into 2.
Right.
2021 Celtics and the 2022 Celtics.
Right.
So this is all since New Year's Eve. Differential, 12.2. 2016-17 Warriors, 11.6, won the title. 96-97 Bulls, 10.8, won the title. So the 2022 Celtics, starting at New Year's Eve, don't talk to me about October.
Yep.
Have the second best point per game differential since the merger. And it's pretty good. Like that line, I just love that stat. And everybody around them has won the title. So I'm surprised you don't believe in them. Got them going to the finals and losing. So brutal.
I don't believe in them. I have going to the finals. I have to beat Brooklyn and Milwaukee back to back year. I just think that's
and losing.
A really hard road. Phoenix since January 1st, 37-10. Dallas 35-12. Celtics 34-12. Memphis 33-12. I'm with you. I actually think people are sleeping. This Brooklyn Boston thing. Now, I don't want to jinx it. There's more rumbling. Simmons is going to come back midway through the series. But Robert Williams will be back middle of the series, in my opinion.
Can I give you a half baked idea here?
Yeah,
I've gone down a few YouTube spirals. I get caught and I can't pull myself out of it. Greatest entrances. So it's a lot of like Eminem shows up at a concert, Drake shows up at his concert to do his verse.
CM Punk.
Yeah, a lot of Royal Rumble stuff.
Yeah,
the countdown. So if Robert Williams or Ben decide to come back, I would just like at one point, you know, don't be on the bench. Just be like, oh, we don't know where Robert Williams or Ben Simmons is. And then it's just like, boop, boop,
oh, like
boop.
Chris Jericho in 1999. Yeah.
Robert Williams comes back. There's a famous like Larry Bird, like here comes Larry Bird. Just take it to the next level and just give me a full on Ben Simmons theme song. If Ben comes back out in Boston, be like, boo. It's like, yeah, Ben Simmons is back. I would love it.
So the Celtics for game 5, everyone's on the court, warm-ups, they're about to do the announce-ups, and it just goes dark. And a spotlight on the entrance.
And it's The Rock. Oh, The Rock is here. But then The Rock introduces somebody.
So it's Robert Williams.
It'd be great.
I think
we need a good theme song. I don't know if we have enough time to get the composers to compose something great.
No, you just use the Chris Jericho where it'd be like, dan, dan. It's like that loud countdown. Great. And then it just, there's an explosion. The explosions, I think, would help too. I think we see him, the way this, the spacing of the schedule just was a total fluke, really broke nicely for both teams. I personally think Simmons, who we still know has not full court scrimmaged at all, and they're claiming like, well, if he comes back, they'll ramp it up. But if he gets thrown into this, not having played basketball for a year, a guy that allegedly has battled with some of his, like, you know, mental makeup stuff.
Sure.
And he goes into this, I think the Celtics are just going to hack a Benham, put him on the line right away, try to mess with him. I really think that's what they're going to do. Like, you can't just let him come out there and be like, cool, I'm just going to guard Jason Tatum and I'll stay out of the way on offense. It's like, no, man, motherfucker, you're in this series. You're going to the foul line right now. Let's see it. Let's see what you got. And so try to get him.
That's interesting. So this is, I think the Nets need to get up. You know, that last year we had like a few blowout playoff games. And the Celtics have blown some people out. And the Nets can never hold on to a lead. When the Nets were up 20 right. points the other day.
Because their defense sucks. They're bad on defense, like legitimately.
So I wanted the Nets to have a big lead. This is what I want. The Nets to have a big lead and then get Ben 5 random minutes. Mm. And the reason why I think they're going to do that is when Ben went to Philadelphia to sit on the bench, I thought it was very smart. Because he didn't go on all the road trips. And I think the Nets were in Boston the game before, and he didn't go to Boston. But there was a decision made between Ben's camp or the Sixers or the Nets. Whoever. We're like, hey, man, you're going to have to, let's just dip your toe into this.
Yeah.
Just sit on the bench. Just sit there. And we're going to have to do it eventually. And I thought it was a smart kind of ramp up. But again, you know, I don't think throwing him in the cauldron of the playoffs is their plan. So
you can't throw him into a road game. It's got to be like game 3 or game 4 in Brooklyn if he comes back. I still don't think he's going to come back though. Yeah.
I think it'd be good for him just to come. If they're up big, here comes Ben.
He kind of looks like, you know when Tom Cruise goes, what's that wax museum? Where like
Madame Tussauds.
Yeah, and it's like Tom Cruise met his wax dummy of Tom Cruise and look exactly alike, and it's got the frozen Tom Cruise smile, and then Tom Cruise stands by it and takes pictures. That's kind of what Ben Simmons looked like in that green outfit 2 days ago. Like, he's just there. He's frozen with this look on his face. I don't know. I would be very cautious. The Time Lord thing is different because I think he had the best version of that surgery. I think one of the reasons they wanted to play Brooklyn, other than they just think they're better, is that they thought he might be coming back. And as you said, they have a really big sample size now. This is a like 15-week sample size of the Celtics, like taking huge leads in the first half on teams, of being really, really elite defensively, of Tatum, who I think is going to make first team All NBA, it looks like. It's not like they don't have good players. So
do you think that?
I was going to say, I think the Minnesota Memphis series goes 6 or 7. I like that series. I just think I think it's going to be a back and forth, just really young, athletic, fun to watch. 6 or 7 on FanDuel is +106. Boston Brooklyn going 6 or 7 is -192. You can parlay those together for +213. And then I like Golden State and 5 for +290 as a flyer. Those are my faves. We'll see.
What was your Toronto Philly thing? That feels like the biggest upset that you just kind of like, I got Toronto over Philly.
Well, they're +154. +154, which isn't that big of an upset. But I think like if you go Raps and 6 +490, you'd think if they're down 3, Philly's down 3-2, no Tybal for game 6. You're in Toronto and you have Harden, whose legacy of do or die games is probably the worst in the league. Give Embiid 37. Give Embiid 37 a game in this series. I still think Toronto could beat them. It's going to be Harden. They need Harden in the series. I trust him the least of any good player we've had the last 10 years.
I think that is a brilliant strategy of hey, let's give Embiid, let's pencil Embiid in for 45, and let's not let Harden get anything and watch him just self-destruct.
We saw Pop did this with Nash in 2005. He was like, Nash, knock yourself out, man. You can 35, 40 a game. Good. Go for it. Nobody else is, we're staying home on everybody else. You get yours. And Nash talked about it. We talked about it on my podcast. It like fucked with his head.
That he wanted to get people involved. Because then Embiid would start forth like, oh, Harden, you get, you know, Embiid's a nice guy and wants, you know, everybody to eat. That would be interesting.
The other thing with Embiid, he was in good condition this year. And I thought he finished games better than he has at any other point in his career. But these playoff games are also, they're really intense. They feel like a game and a half, and the kind of burden he's going to have in a series like this. You know, they don't have, if Harden doesn't get going, they don't have that kind of random heat check guy other than Maxey. So the question for me is, are they going to let Maxey drive the car, or is it going to be like a James Harden? Did you see Jalen had one of the best bits I've seen in a while from him?
Oh, he said the concert thing?
Yeah, Harden's box scores look like concerts. 3 for 14, 4 for 12. You just line all of them up. I thought that was great. All right, let's do a half-baked idea.
Oh, wow.
Unless you have do you have a round one pick you want to throw at us? Anything?
No, I think yours are.
Nothing you're fired up about? Give me one. You like Brooklyn, don't you? I can see it in your eyes.
I want to like the Celtics, but if Ben comes back, I'm going to root for Ben. I'm going to root for Ben just because I feel like Ben doesn't have enough people. I feel like Ben doesn't have enough fans. I'm like, I'll be your fan, buddy. I'm rooting for you. I like the Celtics, but you know.
This is interesting. So you feel like there's an inefficiency for the Ben Simmons fans.
Just who's riding for Ben? Who is just like, Ben Simmons is my guy. You never made a mistake. You've never been like felt, you know, pressure and haven't been able to meet the expectations. Everybody has felt that like, well, he's trying to get his money back. Like, yeah, you know what? It's worth an email. Hey, can I have my $19 million?
Right.
I do not hold Ben like, oh, you know, if I was in the, I would play. If I couldn't play, I would let the Sixers keep the money. I wouldn't. I would send a few emails. Hey, here's a PDF. I would let it play out a little bit for $19 million. Oh, you know, in my day, you'd have to go to work. Yeah, I get it. But it's, you know, it's worth a few texts. It's worth hiring a lawyer to say, yeah, I'd like to get the money. Meanwhile, he could have faked a back injury the entire time and got his money. So there's an element of honesty to being transparent about his mental health that I think should be applauded.
Wow. I
got fired up about Ben.
Unassailable take. I was excited because I felt like my son was in the driver's seat in the Ben Simmons versus Ben Simmons. A lot of stuff going for him. Got him the high school he wanted to get into. He's going to play football next year.
Then
Nets Ben Simmons. Now he's on the comeback trail. My dumbass Ben Simmons, who keeps skateboarding, even though we tell him not to skateboard, does the hairline fracture of his ankle because he cracked it on a skateboard. He's out 4 weeks. Misses eighth grade baseball season, missed this whole last two rounds of a 7v7 football thing that he was in, and now has retired from skateboarding.
Wow.
But it's like you have your kids and you're just like, this turned into parent corner. Your kids, you're like, hey, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. And they're like, I know better than you. I'm 14. I know better. Don't tell me. And then it's like, oh, now you're in a cast for 4 weeks, you dumbass.
Go skate in the metaverse. That's what I tell my kids. I say, hey.
Right.
You want to play, skateboard? Get in the metaverse. Put on your Oculus.
That's the first good case I've heard for the metaverse.
The metaverse is the worst.
The metaverse. You can't get hurt. Your kids are safe in the metaverse, other than the psychological damage.
God, the metaverse.
All right. Let's hear two great half-baked ideas and we'll wrap.
Oh, my gosh. My best half-baked idea. Okay. I'll start with a sports one. And I'll end with my other business. I'm going to start. This is a business, though. It's called, the media is so fractured right now. We've got podcasts and TV shows. It's not like the olden days where you could just rip the back page of the newspaper and stick it to a bulletin board. And there you got your bulletin board material. It used to be easy. The head coach could do that. You could coach the team and provide the bulletin board material. But now the way the media is, who's got time for it? Certainly you don't if you're trying to coach a team.
Right.
That's why you call me. And my new business, Bulletin Board Material Inc. You call me and say like, oh man, you know, we need to get fired up for this game. Is there any bulletin board material out, Kevin? Like, good question. I will comb the sports universe and find sort of the hotter takes, and I will mail you a fully completed bulletin board that you can put up in the locker room. So we have three.
So
levels.
Are these media takes or like, because there's a player a take where Bruce Brown had that thing about they don't have Rob Williams.
That's
we
exactly
could go
right.
at Tyson Horford and say, ah, put that on the bulletin board.
But I didn't know if that made it. So that's early. But then Kevin Durant tried to defuse it. That
right. He pulled it off the bulletin board.
But he doesn't have, he's not a client. Or right. He's not allowed to put, so I keep it on the bulletin board. I got three levels. I got trash talk. This is just in general regular season game. If you need some bulletin board material, just trash talk from the media, from other players. You know, I got to go through Draymond's entire podcast, see if there's anything I can put on the bulletin board. Level two, no one believes in us. Classic bulletin board material. You know, they can't play defense, this and that. And then this one, you have to sign another waiver. It's inflammatory rhetoric. And now we cannot be held accountable if you order the inflammatory rhetoric billboard, bulletin board, and you know your quarterback melts down and throws three interceptions, or if James Harden goes, you know, 1 for 15 and 0 for 10 from three and with a bunch of turnovers and he sets a turnover record again. That one is dangerous. It's almost like hot ones where I you know, just a little bit of inflammatory rhetoric. So that's bulletin board material.
I like that's hot ones.
It's like hot. Yeah. It's like, hey, be careful. Just a dab. You just need a little bit of inflammatory rhetoric.
So Quinn Snyder calls you.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, man, I'm worried about my team. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like we're locked in enough. I don't feel like the guys are agitated enough. So you're like, hold on, Quinn, I got you. I'm going to go through. I have a list of all the people who didn't pick Rudy for Defensive Player of the Year, First Team All Defense, and some of the most inflammatory things that said about him.
Well, not too much because I don't want to throw him off. I don't have that like, hey, Donovan's only passed the ball to Rudy Gobert, you know, four times in 10 years. Or I don't want to do that because then Donovan will start forcing the ball on the block. So I got to be very
careful. So it's got to be like somebody on a TV show doing the, you can't win with Donovan Mitchell.
Exactly.
Very generic big picture. I like this.
Can I tell you, like, that literally happened. Remember on Turner, Donovan, it was regular season last year? Whether it was Shaq or Barkley, it's like, you're not a superstar. I don't think it is. And he's like, okay. And he responded and he started scoring 50 points in the bubble.
Well, so Embiid, that was a better one when they all called out Embiid. And Embiid, it was like a spiritual awakening for him for whatever reason.
It works.
Like, these guys hurt my feelings. All right, what's your next one?
This is not sports related, but it's probably worth $1 billion if anybody wants to jump on it. It's called Fitz Furniture. It's a furniture company. Now, is it the best quality furniture? It isn't. Is it the most stylish furniture in the world? It's not. Does it fit through the doorway? You're damn right it does. This furniture fits through doorways. It fits up the stairs. You got a landing on your stairs. You can flip that couch in there. It goes right up. That's the only thing we're trying to do. It fits and it's light. Why are you making furniture out there like an art project with no bearing on how a standard door is? Buy a chair. I don't know if it's going to fit. Need David Blaine to come over and get it in. Not with Fitz Furniture. It all fits. It's comfortable enough. And it's light. So when you need to move it, it's nice and easy. It saves your marriage. It totally fits. That's it. Fits furniture. That's $1 billion idea.
That sounds like a New York City idea.
It's an idea.
Everywhere else in the world, we could just put stuff through doors or windows.
You're putting a couch. You can get a couch into your basement.
It is
no
true
problem.
That couches should be able to fit through doors. We should work on that. With you.
Fitz Furniture. Right,
give me one more before we go.
Oh, I got the Silver Bullet Beer of the Month. Want to hear that one?
Yeah.
This is my mother-in-law got me a Beer of the Month Club. I said, oh, thank you. So I get 12 beers from around America. And it comes with the recipes that might go well with the beer and a little profile of the brewmaster and their inspiration. It's like almost, and I get a poem. It's beautiful. So I do this exact thing. And Then I get all the beers. They buy them in bulk. I open up the beers and I dump them in the drain because they're undrinkable. Trying to drink oatmeal beer, peanut butter beer, agave beer. I don't want it. And I fill it up with Coors. I fill it up with Coors Light. I recap it and then I mail it to you. So you still get this whole artisanal story. You can feel like you're special and you're, you know, participating in the renaissance of American brewery and, you know, and all when we made things, but you get to drink delicious Coors Light and nothing that has, you know, strawberries.
Or even Miller Lite.
I have a deal with, it's called the Silver Bullet Beer of the Month Club, but I could do right, Miller Lite. That's another
option. No, that's
option.
Fair. Whatever. Whatever beer you like. So it's you basically can like. Request the beer you like.
Yeah.
But the bottle's much fancier. It's so funny you mentioned this.
The design is great.
I bought, because now you can buy beer, right? They just deliver it. So I was like going, and I bought this one, I don't know, it was like, because I thought like, oh, somebody will like this, like these special flavored ones.
It's got a
guess. Guess what wasn't touched in the fridge?
Of course.
Nephew Kyle won't drink those.
It's terrible.
Like, there's been like six pumpkin ale things in my fridge for like 3.5 years. Even Nephew Kyle just eyes them and is like, eh, I'm good.
I'll come over and drink the pumpkin ale. It's got to be under 50 degrees though. Pumpkin ale, Halloween.
Cold drink pumpkin ale. Okay.
Oof, it's great.
All right. You can hear Wilds on First Things First and watch him too because it's a television show.
Yeah, both.
Good to see you as always.
Good to see you, buddy.
All right, Eddie Johnson is here. He's going to yell at me about Devin Booker being fourth on my MVP ballot. But I love his show on Sirius NBA channel with Justin Termini, who's also been on this podcast. I'm finally excited for you that you get to be the real host after toiling away with Justin. Like, I'm sure this is like a thrill for you just to be with me for a half hour.
It totally is. My heartbeat is just normal. Seriously, like I have to get myself ramped up. I saw my doctor a couple of weeks ago. He prescribed some stuff for me to stay calm.
Because 5 days a week with Justin, it's just starting to hurt your blood.
Well, you know what? Look, he has nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So he plans his whole day to try to get under the skin of people. Like you and I, we have so many other things in our lives. And we're doing so many things. We don't have time to even think of. I don't have time to think about him once the show is over, even before the show. But
yeah.
He's thinking about me 24/7.
Right? And you're in his head.
He's trying to find a way to get under my skin. That's what he does.
Well, it's a great show. I've randomly been in my car and I've just called in unannounced to argue because you guys got me fired up about something. you're in Phoenix. You do a good job on the games too. It's funny. Thanks. The color guys on the different teams, right? Sometimes it'll be a little cheerleader. You have a nice mix. Like obviously you're rooting for the Suns, it's your team, but you'll be critical. You've been on this Devin Booker MVP bandwagon thing for a long time. I had him fourth. I appreciated how special that Suns team was. Really, you were one of the first people I heard talking about it. Like, hey, it's not just that they're beating teams, they're toying with them. Mm-hmm. They are laying on these 20-5 runs and these 25-3 runs and stuff like that. When do you think it shifted for Booker this season?
I think it really shifted for him, to be quite honest, Bill, when Ricky Rubio came.
Hmm.
And Ricky Rubio, I think, taught him to trust him that he didn't always have to have the ball. It's almost similar to what Phil Jackson did with Michael Jordan, with Scottie Pippen. And I think, you know, Ricky Rubio and Monty convinced him that it doesn't matter, you know, how many touches you get. The touches that you do get are going to be tremendous, and your scoring average is going to be good, and you're going to win games. And I think Devin bought into it because he was tired of losing. Mm. He knew he could score on anybody, and he just said, okay, I'm going to give that a shot. Matter of fact, he told Monty, I want to be coached. That was his exact words to Monty when Monty took the job. He said, I want to be coached. And that's what he's done. And Devin has adhered to it, and it's turned out to be a tremendous run for him. And I think that's when it turned around. And then Chris Paul just took it to a new level.
Well, that's the thing. You talk about young players, right? So he gets Rubio in there, who's unselfish, who's a vet. Gets Monty Williams, who easily could have gone to the Lakers. And boy, would he be miserable right now. And then you get Chris Paul, who's one of the great unselfish teammates of his generation.
Yeah.
little difficult to play with if you're the wrong guy, I think, for Booker. He just wants to play with people who are wired like Chris Paul. Booker is. So he gets these three people. What happens if he doesn't meet any of these people? What happens if he's just on Phoenix and let's say they're the Sacramento Kings with what's happened with them, where they're just they're bringing more lottery picks in. It never works. The coach keeps changing. The GM keeps changing. And Booker's just basically the De'Aaron Fox in this situation. Does he still have an ascent? What does it look like?
I think he probably would have been gone.
Mm.
And that's with any player, right? I mean, if they find that things aren't going to work out, you know, and they don't think, you know, they're going to be able to get guys in there to help raise them to a new level, they start thinking about leaving that particular team. And that was my fear.
Yeah.
Because I know how good he is. From the first moment he put a Suns uniform on and Jeff Hornacek was like trying to delay the inevitable, him starting and him being the guy, you can just tell in the few minutes that he got that this kid is going to be special. And
yeah.
And so this organization needed Chris Paul, Bill. They needed Chris Paul to just balance Devin and show him the other side of success and not chasing it just based on your numbers. And it's taking him to a great level.
It's funny when you know early with the young guys, because Tatum was like that for the Celtics. It would just became clear pretty quickly, like, oh,
yeah,
this one's actually like there's something special about him. What's interesting about Booker, I did a bunch of pods with Durant. I probably did six in 2 years with him. And one of them, he started raving about Booker. And Booker was a nobody at that point. I mean, he was a lottery pick. He was on the Suns, but they, you know, the team stunk.
Right.
And I think I asked him something like, What young players on your radar who do you think might have it? Who might have it under the... And he was like Booker. And he went on this thing. You were an ex-player. You played for 19 years. You were born too soon. The three-point line would have made you probably an extra $100 million. But did you see... Do you feel like the guys who played, they see something? There's some sort of DNA thing that they can spot that somebody like me couldn't spot?
Yeah, you know what you see, Bill, is you see a calm. You see like... a guy that understands the science of what his craft really is in regards to dissecting his game, and that's the score.
Mm.
He is always on balance. That's one of the first things that I saw with him, that he's always on balance. He rarely takes really bad shots. Like, you know, if you're a scorer, you're going to take bad shots. But if you watch Devin, he rarely does. But what also makes him unique, and you'll agree with this because I know you remember watching Ricky Pierce play.
Oh, yeah.
Is Ricky Pierce loved to have contact when he shot. It was just something about a guy very close to you when you took your shot. Mm. And that's Devin. I mean, it's like it forces him maybe concentrate more. That's why he probably gets into it. But when I saw that, and then just the way that he approached the game and how respectful he was of the game. Like, a lot of guys aren't respectful of the game. They don't know the history. They don't respect the players that they watched growing up. You know, and Devin has been all of that. He's been in my ear since he's been in Phoenix. And that's the value of where he is now. You know, and obviously Kobe took it to a new level when Kobe befriended him.
Yeah,
and he is just professional, man. He is one of the most professional players I've ever seen, and that's why he's successful.
I love your contact point. There's a like Vinnie Johnson was like that too. He needed mm-hmm. to have somebody like basically in his jersey, and that would when he would really get going. There's certain mm-hmm. guys that just they feed off that. I think it's something Tatum is learning how. That's one of the ways I think he's gotten better this year is beating guys off the dribble and kind of keeping them on his side and knowing how to use that kind of stuff against him. The Kobe thing with Booker, you know, they were beating into the ground during the playoffs last year. You know, he's not Kobe. But I think out of all the guys we have now, I think there's the most kind of Kobe chromosomes floating in his pool, right? He does stuff, first of all, the as you said, like the competitiveness and the commitment to the craft and things like that. The fact that he doesn't take terrible shots. Kobe went through that stage, younger Kobe, when he did take terrible shots.
Right.
That got better as he got older. What are the other similarities? What about like from an alpha dog hanging out in a room standpoint? What is that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, he is a loner, so to speak, but this team is very close.
Yeah.
And so he's opened up now because of that. But I'll just give you something else. He is relentless, talks a lot of smack, which I love. I was a smack talker. I love
it. Yeah, that was your era.
Yeah, it keeps guys off balance. Love it. But also what I love about him is he understands now how to lead.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these guys are always over his house. He's always in the middle of them, in the midst of them. And now he understands that now that he said 8 positive things to them, that it's okay for him to say some negative things. He just understands and give credit to, I think, to his upbringing, how his dad raised him as a basketball player. And I think that plays a role in it as well. He's special, Bill. And I'm going to say this. And that's this. And so people understand why I'm pushing him, because he is special. He's going to be better. And I think people are having a hard time with it because, you know, he's 6'4", 6'5", and that's the average height in the league. We've seen guys come in the league and they can score and all of that. He has another level to get to. He truly does. And he showed it when Chris Paul went down.
Yeah.
Average 7 assists. Like, people don't think he can pass. He can pass the ball. He can operate in the 2-man game. It is a level he can get to that people have not seen.
Yeah, and even beyond the assists, what impressed me about that stretch was he was kind of game managing. Uh-huh. You know, it's one thing to be like, okay, I'm now going to dribble the ball up and I'll throw you the ball. But he actually, and Tatum, it's something he developed too this year, this ability to kind of see what the defense is doing. Like, they're going to play probably Brooklyn in round one, and Brooklyn's just going to trap the shit out of him from 40 mm-hmm. feet, right? And mm-hmm. I think he's going to be able to solve that as the series goes along because his hoops IQ has just gotten better and better. I see the same with Booker.
Tatum's handle has gotten so much better. His feel for the game has gotten better.
I'm so proud of him.
Yeah. He knows he doesn't have to take 25 shots.
Right.
Like, I try to tell these young guys, and this is a guy that played a role. I started my first 4 years, but after that, I came off the bench and I made a living at it. And like I tell these young guys, man, it's a science to scoring. You don't have to rush it. If you get the minutes, you will get your numbers.
Right.
I mean, that's just the beauty of it. And the all-time greats figure that out. You can go to any all-time great that will score. You will see. If he gets 30 minutes, he's going to get his average because he understands how to do it.
Well, Ice was the best example of that ever. Mm-hmm. Ice would just, and back then when you went to see Ice in person, they didn't have the scoreboard with the points. So then they would say the points at the end. And you'd watch the whole Spurs game. You'd be there in the building. And they'd be like, blah, 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 blah. And George Gervin had 43. I'd be like, George Gervin had 43? I thought he had like 24. And it was like, nope. He had like 10 points a quarter. And then in the third quarter, he had 13. And that's how he got to 43. I was like, I was there. I didn't even notice it.
My first encounter with him, as a young player, I had it rolling in the game, and obviously he's getting his numbers. And obviously my game is using screens and using my teammates to get open. And I ran him off a screen. And Josie Merriweather, and Josie's gone now, missing dearly, laid a screen on him and got him good. And I came off, hit the jumper. And I remember going back down, he was looking at me. He said, "A young fella." I'm like, "Yeah, Mr. Gervin." They're like doing the game, right? I mean, like, I'm so respectful of all these old-time guys that I watch. He's like, "Look, listen. Look, man, look. Trust me. When the game is over, I'm going to probably be plus 10 on you. So just let me know when I'm going to get picked, man. I'm good." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Let me know. Yeah, I don't need to get hit that hard."
And it's probably like a big threat. I could be plus 25 on you if I really wanted it.
Yeah, I was like, I walked away from that game, man. I was cracking up, man. Every time I see him, I hug him. I remind him of it. He's like, "Come on, young fella."
Do you take it personally? Like, because you're around the team, obviously, as a broadcaster, when these guys, like if somebody like Booker, who sounds like he's a pretty curious kid, that they don't lean on you and get in your ear and ask you for stories and just kind of tap into you as like the Yoda of the team, basically?
I tell them, I say it's your loss. That's just how I view it. Like, you know, I'm not going to be overbearing on anybody. If they knock on my door, they ring my phone, I'll talk their ear off. And I'll break things down. And I've had a lot of players in the past that have done that. And, you know, there's certain players, man, that I might go by because I feel sorry for them, that I see them struggling, and I might say something. And if they embrace what I say, then I'll keep going. If they don't, I'll just move on. I'm not going to force feed anybody. You know, you shouldn't be immersed in your struggles if it's something simple you can get out of. And it's a lot of players that I see that's immersed in simple struggles that really with a good ear and a good voice just to go up to them that ran that road and went that marathon and tell them that can get them on stride, you know, they should be embrace it. But a lot of them don't. They rather embrace this workout guy that, you know, they met when they were in middle school. Right. And, you know, he's hanging on and, you know, they're paying him a ton of money and he's teaching them these weird drills and they think that's the key. And it's really simple.
What would you, so let's say you see Ben Simmons. Let's say it's a Brooklyn Phoenix Finals, and Ben Simmons has not played the whole year, and you just end up sitting next to him at a restaurant. And he's like, "Hey, you played it." You just start talking, and he's like, "What do you think? How can I get better?" What would you tell him?
Well, first I would tell him you're on the right team, man, because we know you don't love to score. Like, you score because it's a necessity, and you're there, and you're in that situation. But really, what you love to do is defend and pass the ball. We get it, okay? But you got to still go to your sweet spots and just do damage. And people won't bother you. Like, you won't stand out. Like, get your foot in the paint, like he did when Joel went down last year and he dropped 42 on Gobert, right?
Yeah.
That's where his sweet spots are. So if you want to get to your sweet spots, then what you got to do, rebound the ball yourself, push it. Two, beat KD down the court and plant yourself in there and force them to throw it to you. But don't be selfish in doing it. I mean, that's how you get fans off of you. Like, they'll tend to forget. And he doesn't understand that. He doesn't know that. He's locked in. Oh, I passed up a jumper. When really, in essence, fans don't really care. They want to see the ball go through the hoop, however you can get it done. And that's his struggle right now. It's between his ears, man. But he's on the right team, Bill, because he doesn't have to shoot. Because he got Kyrie and KD going to do all the shooting. He can hide in the midst of those guys. And then Patty Mills on one side. You got Steph Curry on another side. He is in the best position he could be in as a basketball player.
Fear of failure. An underrated NBA skill or detriment, depending on which side of it you're on. But he definitely, I think once you're afraid to fail, like they're talking about, he might be back for the Celtics series if they play Celtics. We're taping this before the playing game.
Yeah.
I'm like, that would be insane to bring him back. Guess what the Celtics would do? They would foul him the moment he comes in and try to put him on the line and try to get in his head. He's not going to be ready to do that. He hasn't even played full contact basketball yet. So
that AAU mentality just drives me nuts. And that's why I say the Brooklyn's not going to win. Are they talented? Of course they are. But to me, if they win, it's a hit on basketball. Because it's going to tell young kids that they can take time off. You know, they can just play half the games like Kyrie. You know, and they can come and win a championship. That to me, that would be the worst thing to happen. And I haven't seen it since I've been at the game at a high level, and I don't plan on seeing it. I just cannot see them being able to do it. And adding Ben Simmons and without practice time, without a knowledge of all the teammates, and to think that's going to blend in and lead you to win 16 games in the second season, not buying it.
I wonder if all the stuff that's happened the last couple of years is going to make teams a little more hesitant to turn their entire franchise is over to like one or two guys or an agency or both, you know, because you think Clippers had bad luck, right? But at the same time, they traded away an entire decade of stuff for these two guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they're healthy, maybe it's a different conversation, but we're year three, it's not. The Lakers, they got the titles in the bubble, but now they're in an absolute quagmire. But then you have the Philly situation, the Brooklyn situation. You have what Houston did every year where they're trying to make Harden happy.
Right.
And I'm starting to wonder if, you know, I think teams gravitate to whatever the model is that works.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to look at Boston and Phoenix and Memphis and Milwaukee as these models of like, we have the star, We have stability. We have consistency. We have guys that have been together for 3, 4, 5, 6 years in some cases. Mm-hmm. Like in Boston's case, the best three guys in the team have been playing together since 2016-17.
Right.
You know, and that, at some point that matters, as you know, because you were on a bunch of different teams. The teams that were probably the best teams you were on were the teams that at least stayed together a little bit. So maybe that comes back. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I hear you. And I think what's been lost in translation over the years is communication. It's like, just because you're paying a guy a lot of money, he's going to be okay. He won't leave. Mm. He won't take less. That is not true. Like, if you love the game of basketball, the only thing that makes you happy is playing the game of basketball. And playing it at a high level, and if you have expectations on you, you want to make sure you live up to those expectations. And so it's upon the team to communicate with these guys and make sure that you keep them right. Like, we're going to work with this, man. We're going to get this right. You got to be patient with us. And kind of give them some ownership. I think sometimes teams just take it for granted and they lose that player. And all of a sudden now they're trying to grab them back, i.e. Ben Simmons. Like, they heard those fans moaning and groaning all the time. I mean, with somebody in his ear to just really help him, forget about the fact getting on him that he's not shooting, but you say, hey, Ben, what's going on, man? What can we do to help you? Just constantly to show him the love. And then those comments from Doc and Joel Embiid, they wouldn't hurt as much as they did.
Right.
But you could tell, based on his reaction to what they said, told me that his relationship was not at a high level with those two guys.
Well, plus they try to trade him though too, and I think that was the biggest piece of it. That it was like, oh no, we actually do like you. We just, like, let's forget about the part when we were 90% down the road to trading you. But no, we're really glad you're here. I wonder, like, you know, and I'm sure you're around it way more than I am now. But the phones and the whole concept of a team in some cases, where in your era in the 80s, you guys were together all the time. You're flying. You didn't even have charters back then. And you spent an incredible amount of time together. You really got a feel for each other in a lot of different ways. And that eventually shifted over the next 40 years. But it does feel like every generation in the NBA had their one thing that was like the big obstacle, right? Yours had the cocaine era. It was like it either ruined or, you know, tarnished or set back a lot of guys from the 80s.
A lot of guys.
And then the 90s was money and these contracts that people are getting when they're 19 and 20 that they couldn't handle it. Then we move into like this generation and it's the social media and it's being on the phones all the time. Even the commissioners talked about it, like really being worried about, you know, the state of mind of his players and the connection that they have to each other. And, you know, that's why I've watched a team like Phoenix or like what Boston has now. And you're like, man, this is it. This is what it should look like.
Yeah. They do lack focus, Bill. They truly do lack focus. And the reason why they lack focus is because they got so much going on.
Yeah.
Like, when I came up, man, I didn't have anything going on. I mean, the mobile phone was this heavy. You don't want to carry that daggone thing around all the time. I mean, it's like, you know, we didn't have cable to a high level when we were watching all these shows. We didn't have apps. You know, we weren't able to navigate computers.
Twitter.
So much info in front of them that they don't know how to balance it all. And then throw in looking good, you know, with the jewelry and, you know, and decorating the body and wearing the clothes. I mean, there's so much in place for them now that is very difficult at times. And that's why the ones that you do see navigate it, you look at them and you appreciate them. But yeah, the challenge is to continually communicate with these young kids, man. Let them know that, man, your career is really short.
Yeah.
Like, just because you came into the league at 18 does not mean you're going to play longer. Once you start running that marathon, you don't know when your body's going to break down. Like, I'm looking at James Harden right now. People are like, he's not playing well. I'm telling people, no, his body is failing him. He's 32, but his body is probably 38.
Yes.
Because of how he handled himself. And that's on him. That's his personal preference. He's had a tremendous career. He's an unbelievable player. But you look back in the past. I mean, you look at the Isaiah Thomas in the world, 13 years. Magic Johnson, you know, everybody in their low teens. You know, and so these guys think they're going to play long, and it's not always the case. And people have to communicate that to them and get them on course to say, if you want a title, then, man, you got to hurry up and go get it because it's not guaranteed to you.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was talking to a Celtics buddy of mine the other day about the time the Celtics almost traded for Iverson. And it was, I think, a year before the KG trade. And at one point, it seemed like it was going to happen where it was like, Al Jefferson, whatever contract, two first round picks, and the Celtics really pushing it. They ended up sending him to Denver, and he had probably two more years in Denver. Then Denver flipped him, and all of a sudden his career was over. And you think, like, man, what a what if for the Celtics, where the door B was Kevin Garnett, and then this great 5-year run they had, they only won one title, but door A was Iverson, who at the time I would have been super excited, like, oh my God, we got Allen Iverson. He averages 30 points a game. But going to what you said, like, was not a guy that took care of himself. And
no,
I do,
he wasn't.
We don't know what Harden does at night, but he looks different. He looks slower. His game has changed. I mean, we have a general idea of what he does at night.
Can't get around people, can't move laterally. That happens when you get older, but you can fight it off if you do the necessary things to stay in front of.
Right.
And that's what I'm seeing with him right now.
Yeah, and we've seen other guys like LeBron's year 19 and has figured out how to, you know, now he missed.
Chris Paul as well. Chris Paul.
Chris Paul, who stopped eating meat. Was he plant-based, no sugar, no meat, and became a different guy, which I'm sure Houston wishes they had, that he had told him that he was going to do all that. What made you play so long? I mean, you're like a complete anomaly. It was like you and Parrish and Kareem. You played what, 18 years, something? 18 or 19 years?
Yeah, 18 years. I played 17 NBA and 18 total. Yeah,
Jesus.
I played 1 year in Europe.
Yeah, but that was an era when people didn't do that, though.
They didn't do that. And I will say this, one, I'm blessed. My mom's 92 years old. She looks like she's 60, okay? Mm. So I'm not going to own all of it. But I think, for me, I paid attention, Bill, to my life as I grew up. And I just took a point to say, I'm not going to be like him. I'm not going to be like him. And those hims weren't friends of mine. They were my brothers. And they would remind me, don't be like me.
Yeah.
And so I took that to heart, man. And I knew I was I was next to the last in line to make it right for my mom, who raised 7 kids by herself. And so I knew that it was on me when it became my time. And back then, you know, I mean, my first year in NBA, I made $65,000. I almost made more money on my shoe contract with Pony than I did with my salary. And I said, I got to play a long time. And I just took care of myself. That was it. I mean, I talked to people. I learned from people. I stayed away from people that were doing the wrong things. As you mentioned, that era was kind of drug infested. I've never put a drug in my body. And so those are the things I went for. And lo and behold, I was able to play that long. So it's no surprise to me how I lasted that long, because I thought I did all the correct things to do it. And I had a lot of ex-teammates, a lot of friends. They'll come up to me and they'll say, man, I should have hung with you more. You know, I should have listened to you, you know. Because they knew their careers got cut short because they did not adhere to detail.
Justin Termini would say your career lasted that long because you didn't guard anybody.
That too. Yeah, you know, I was very selective. I met George Gervin very young. It's like, you know, I'm not going in that paint unless it's an opportunity for me to score. and the great Buck Williams made that known to me. And I love Buck to death. He's a great friend. He and his wife, Mimi, are great. But Buck laid me out one time, man, in the lane. I was in Seattle playing against Portland. And I thought I got hit by a truck.
Mm.
And he just looked at me. He said, I like you, but just don't come in here, man.
Yeah, this is not the place for you.
Yeah, just don't venture down this road here. No. I said, okay.
Well, for the people listening, Eddie's career started so long ago that it started in Kansas City. And you played, what, 4 years in Kansas City?
Yeah,
and most people listen to this. They're like, wait, Kansas City had a team? Yeah, Kansas City had a team. They're now the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, has some tremendous players on that team. Reggie Theus is on that team. Mike Woodson, Larry Drew, LaSalle Thompson, the great Sam Lacy. Phil Ford was one of my mentors when I first got in.
He was good. He just got hurt. Phil Ford, yeah. I think, would have been in that Norm Nixon, Gus Williams, Tiny Archibald kind of that sphere.
He would have been.
He just couldn't stay healthy.
Let me tell you a quick story with Phil Ford. And I will mention Ernie Grunfeld's on that team as well, Reggie King. But quick story with Phil Ford. We're playing a preseason game. Cotton Fitzsimmons is the coach. And I'm a rookie. You know, I'm just quiet, not saying nothing. And we're playing an exhibition game. And Phil had it going. And I was like in shock because I was like, man, I heard NBA players didn't play hard during the exhibition, which is a huge myth, right? And so he was just going off. And so Cotton called a play to end the game for him. And he missed the shot. And so his locker was next to mine. And we're sitting there. And I'm not kidding you. He was bawling. Like, he was crying. I was like, this is the exhibition season.
Right.
But it was so impactful for me. It was like, here's this grown man I watched play, North Carolina. I mean, leading that four corner offense. And it hurt him that bad to miss a shot in a preseason game.
Mm.
And I was moved by that, man. Phil's one of my heroes, man, because he balanced me, man. I was like, okay, you need to take everything serious.
Right. Well, you also, that team, I think the 84-85, I have the poster. You did an All the King's Men poster, which is one of the funniest.
That's one of the best posters ever.
It's one of the funniest, best, coolest 19. You guys have this giant statue behind you, and Reggie Theus, he has his mustache. He looks like the guy from Coming to America. The other crazy thing about your 80s career is there's another Eddie Johnson who's one of the biggest F-ups in the league. And when I was researching my book, there was this whole Sports Illustrated feature about, like, when you talk about wheels coming off somebody's career, he's like a 9.5 out of 10. So you're like, you become like the good Eddie Johnson.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm not that Eddie Johnson, I'm the other Eddie Johnson. But were you aware of this whole other Eddie Johnson situation?
Yeah, I mean, I played against him a few years, and I had encounters with him. And, you know, he was always nice to me.
He was good.
Oh, yeah. John Drew was on that team.
Who just passed away.
Yeah. And so I truly loved, like, competing against him. And, yeah, I mean, here's another guy with my name. But, you know, Edward Johnson is one of the most common names on the face of the earth. Okay? So my mom threw in Arnett as a middle name. But I'm like, I'm not using Arnett Johnson. That doesn't even sound right to me. So I kept Edward with the Eddie. And yeah, I was on vacation in Hawaii with my family. And I had known of his problems and stuff like that, but never to this level.
Yeah.
And when I landed back in Phoenix, my phone was blowing up. I just thought, oh, people miss me. You know, so I'm kind of ignoring it. And then Mike Woodson, who's one of my best friends in the entire world, finally got through. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, what's wrong? You haven't heard? I'm like, nope. He said, well, I'm telling you one thing. You need to get somewhere safe. And I'm like, what? So I'm in the car driving, and I turn on the radio, and that guy that's the host of Undisputed, I'm not going to say his name, it's not Shannon Sharp. How about that?
Yeah.
And he was going off on me. And he was letting me have it. I'm the worst of the worst. Can't believe the Phoenix Suns hired him. How did they not know? Just went crazy on me.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm like in the car. I'm like, what? And what happened, my hometown paper, Chicago Tribune, they wrote an article. Well, they saw the story of Eddie Johnson got arrested for child molestation. And so the guy that, the editor at Tribune thought it was me.
Even oh, my God. I didn't know this story. Oh, my God.
Even though he saw Auburn, 6'2", he changed the story. Oh, that can't be right. Eddie's 6'8". He changed it. Eddie Johnson, University of Illinois, 6'8", was arrested. In the Tribune, my hometown paper. Like, no one recognized it.
Oh, my God.
And so a lot of entities nationwide ran with it. Like, they like, you know, and they followed it. So I'm all in the paper. My website probably had 1 million hits in less than 2 hours. Okay. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was like, so I'm like, okay, I don't carry a weapon, but maybe I need to go get one.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, finally, I get somebody at Fox. They were getting ready to run with a big story on me. What I heard, picture, everything. And somebody at Fox said, no, that's not Eddie. That's not him.
Jesus.
Good for Fox that they did not. Because I don't think I'd be working right now.
Right, seriously.
Yeah, so.
I never knew that story. I only knew all the cocaine issues he had in the early 80s and stuff.
Oh,
I
mean, no, man. It came right back to me. And so, you know, a lot of newspapers had to recant their stories. They had to, you know, rewrite and go through it and all of that. But by then, it was all over the world.
Yeah.
Like if I research like Chinese newspapers now or something like that, they still use my picture when they talk about him. And so, yeah, they paid a price. Don't get me wrong. I have a nice lawyer. They paid a price. All paid a price. But it wasn't fun going through that. It, you know, it just enhanced that the difference between he and I.
Yeah.
And even today, people still make that mistake.
And, oh, that's right. Well, I'm glad you told that story, though, because I didn't know it. So I think a lot of people probably found out. Yeah, that I was thinking about that team because John Drew passed away this week. When we started Grantland, which was, I think, 2011. Uh-huh. I had found out, I got this email from a reader, because back when I was writing, who was like, I live in Houston. John Drew is my cab driver.
Mm-hmm.
You remember John? And I'm like,
oh,
what?
Yeah.
And I was always fascinated by John Drew, because if you look at his basketball reference, I mean, he was even more of a heat check guy than you were. He was like 26, 27 a night, some nights playing like 25 minutes a game. And he kind of flamed out, and he had a lot of the same issues from... But anyway, we tried to do a story about him, and John Drew wouldn't talk. He's like, just please respect my privacy. I don't want to do. And that was what came out this week as well about like the stories where 30 years he turned down interviews about what happened to him.
I didn't even know he passed away.
Yeah.
Wayne Cooper passed away, 2X NBA player, yesterday. I didn't even know that John Drew was unreal, man. He was one of the coolest. Dr. J was the coolest basketball player I'd ever seen, still to this day. But John Drew was right there, man. John Drew, I mean, his uniform was always pristine, man. He just talked smack. And so, yeah, man, he was a tremendous player, man. We had great players, as you know, back then. And people need to know their stories, you know, and not when they pass away either. And that's part of what I try to do. I try to just... you know, let people know how great players were back in my era because they don't know.
Well, Larry Bird used to love playing against you, my guy.
He taught me how to trash talk, man.
He loved the scoring forwards who were more offense than defense in the West. The Western Conference swing had a few of those guys. He loved that trip. Purvis Short, all those guys.
Purvis, Kiki. People don't realize how good Kiki was.
Oh, my God.
They just don't. They don't understand how good Alex English was as a scorer. It was so many scores back then. That's why people say, "Man, you scored 19,000 points and you didn't make an All-Star team." That's why. Right. You had Kiki, you had Purvis, you had Mark Aguirre. I mean, you had Larry Nance, you had Mike Mitchell down in San Antonio. You had James Worthy. That was why.
It was an amazing, and all guys who had different types of games and weren't really 3-point shooters. Even you, who were like a quote unquote 3-point shooter, you probably averaged like what, one a game at your peak?
One a game.
Because you didn't take them.
No.
But now you'd be like, now you would have been, I think, 3 a game. I think you would have taken like 9 threes a game. Oh my God.
I'd be chucking up, making about 40 mil, 50 mil. I don't know how much does Duncan Robinson make. I'll make double.
I'm thinking Joe Harris and Duncan Robinson are like 17, 18 a year. Easily making that. Yeah, you're 20 million a year. You're bouncing around. All right, you got to go do your show. I want you to come back on when it really gets going with the Suns, because I think the Suns are going to be around for a while in these playoffs. I've been trying to tell people, like, The Suns aren't losing. They're, unless somebody gets hurt, they're making the finals. We could, you could make your Golden State case, your Memphis case, whatever, but we are going to see the Suns in the finals unless there's an injury.
We're good, man. We're good, Bill. We can stay healthy. I've never been around a team that has been disconnected, ever. And I'm not just saying that loosely. I've watched these guys all year. They are the real deal in regards to being a team. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Well, you got to ask Monty, like, deep down, kind of happy he didn't take that Lakers job, right? Now, he said it was never offered because Phoenix just jumped the gun and they just offered him and they took him. But holy mackerel.
Yeah, yeah, and James Jones. But yeah. Monty, he knew what he wanted. He knew he wanted to be able to control his environment. He knew he wanted to be able to do all the things that he probably didn't do when he was in New Orleans. You know, and he wanted that second chance with a group of guys, young guys, that would listen to him. And that's why he's here. And they're listening to him. He's like their dad, man. Dad, granddad, all of the above, and coach.
Well, I voted for him coach of the year. So I did have one positive.
All right, at least you did that.
At least I did that. All right, I'm popping on your show at some point, but I'm glad we did this. I'm bringing you back later in the playoffs. Good to see you, Eddie Johnson.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to Wilds. Thanks to Eddie Johnson. Don't forget to check out the Prestige TV podcast. If you like Winning Time, we have a really good episode that's going up. Rewatchable's coming on Monday as well. Enjoy the weekend. I will see you on Sunday night.